the gift of witchcraft.
I was able to see, hear, and communicate with spirits.
A very personal relationship between a person and spirit.
Carnal lust and fun things like that.
Working with different energies and spirits and communicating.
Creating magic.
Powerful ritual and powerful spells.
She's actually sticking me in the cauldron.
The role of the witch is to make change.
Bless it be, y'all. Bless it be. People ask me, like, okay, I'm a witch and I don't know what to do.
20 years ago, three young friends realized they were witches. They scattered to different parts of the world, following magic and spirit. Now, they're back in their hometown to share what they've learned.
Welcome to That Witch Life Podcast, your home for living as a witch in today's world.
Hail and welcome, Witchkin. This is the inaugural episode of That Witch Life Podcast, your source for living as a witch in today's world. You're with your three witchy co-hosts. I'm Courtney.
I'm Kanani.
I'm Hillary.
And we are three witches living in the Pacific Northwest, Oregon in particular. And today's episode is focused on what makes a witch. And so we thought we would start by talking about our witchcraft journeys. One of the interesting things about us is we've all been friends for over 20 years, and in one way or another, our witchcraft journey started together, went in three completely different directions, and within the last couple of months has landed back in the place where we've started. And we were actually just talking today about the explosion of witchcraft in the country, and that now, what was that article, Kanani? You said it's like more witches than Presbyterians in the United States right now?
That's what they're saying.
Wow.
Pretty incredible.
I know. I was so tempted to send that to my Presbyterian friend, but I didn't know if that was going to poke a wound. He's also a minister and has been awesome. And
give him a couple of years. He'll be one of us.
I know. He probably already is, you know. Once they find out about the mead, usually that's what converts most of them when they get tired of church wine.
They love homemade wine.
So, anyway, I'm going to bully my way in first and start with my story. And these two are going to take a nap because they've heard it 1,000 times over.
I actually lived it with you.
You lived it with... Well, some of it you did. And some of it Hillary did. And some of it...
That's true. Some of it you did on your own.
Some of it I did on my own. A little bit. For a few years. I mean, somehow we all managed to survive, tell the tale. But honestly, my story starts when I was a really little girl. I grew up mostly Catholic. My parents took us through catechism, and I was confirmed in a Roman Catholic church out in Beaverton, Oregon. Go ahead and laugh. It turns out the name of our hometown is actually pretty funny, which didn't occur to me until many years later when I was living in New York City. But my mom's family is all very devout Southern Baptist from the mountains of North Carolina. And honestly, in both faiths, I found a lot of magic. You know, as a young Catholic, I loved the rituals of the Roman Catholic Church. I love the initiations. You have to go through all the different sacraments. And there was something really powerful about that for me as a young woman. But honestly, my mom's faith informed a lot of the witchcraft I do now, because in the Southern Baptist tradition, there is an unspoken but a very deep belief in spirits and angels and a real tangible relationship with divinity. In the Catholic Church, you go to church, at least in the Catholic Church that I grew up in, it's different in different cultures, but very white, suburban Roman Catholic Church. You go to Sunday, you say your piece, you listen to the priest, you go home, and that's it. But in my mom's faith, you know, there's prayers that involved in everything and a lot of colloquialisms around the faith, like when we were running late for something and couldn't find enough supplies or whatever. My aunt said, well, unless the parable of loaves and fishes comes true before 3 o'clock today, we're going to have to go to the store. So there's those pieces of it. But for me, I always felt like I was still missing something, and that God was just outside of what I was practicing and what I believed in. And I always felt that when I went to my Bible camp in the summertime on the Oregon coast, that God was in the ocean. And I didn't understand why, when I would come home from the beach, that God no longer felt present in my, you know, suburban house, but God was in the natural world. I've always had the ability to talk to spirits, and I always had dreams that I was able to follow my dreams in order to know the future. And when I was, I think people knew I was a witch before I knew I was a witch. And when I was 16, Kanani gave me my first deck of tarot cards.
I did.
She did. And that's another story, the trials that the poor child went through to give me that tarot deck. Hillary was there that day. It was my 16th birthday party.
I was there that day.
Yeah, I know.
I was green that day.
Oh, God.
I had the flu.
But she's a real friend. Spirit made her trounce through the mall to get my gift, but we'll get back to that some other time. When you are a girl in a Catholic high school and you can read tarot, you are all of a sudden the most popular girl in high school. So that was a quick way for me to feed my ego, was reading tarot for all the other girls and boys in school. But it wasn't until I got Bible thumped pretty hard when people figured out that I was dabbling in this stuff. Some of the scary experiences that Hillary and I had in high school also helped me with that as well.
Very
much. When I was in my 20s, I started having some incredibly profound experiences right around the time of 9/11. I think a lot of people found that their spiritual lives were opening up at that time. I think that the spirits in the world were calling the witches to get involved. And I started practicing, and I started studying a priestess. I ran a coven in New York City for 9 years, moving to the city after college, and have been writing and teaching witchcraft and really being the local witch in all of my communities since then. And now I'm back here in Oregon. I no longer run a coven, actually don't belong to a coven, but I'm finding a lot of my practices are returning to nature. Finding the magical purposes of the weeds in my backyard. So that's my journey. I really feel a lot of my magic comes from my dreams and working with the natural spirits around me. I do have a lot of experience with rituals and more complicated rituals. I feel that helps me root back to my original upbringing. But that is my story. And so let's turn it over to Kanani and hear her story, which you all find much more interesting, I'm sure.
Don't know about that. My growing up was slightly different in that neither of my parents practice any kind of religious faith. The underlying vibe of both of my parents was, you know, sort of just that Christianity is okay, but they never really practice it anything.
She went to the church of don't be a dick.
Yes, that's what my mom ingrained in me. Just whatever you do, don't be an asshole. I'm like, okay, I get that.
I always liked her mom. I still like her mom.
And so I kind of, as a child, was very fascinated with the idea of theology, and I actively sought to find some sort of faith. So I had an aunt and uncle that used to go to a Christian church. So for a while I would go with them, and because it was all I knew, everything was very centered around the Christian faith. And I actually had a grandfather who was very spiritual, and he did not go to church, but he told me stories of when he had seen miracles. One of those stories was a story that he talked about when he was 17 and he was working as a logger, and he watched a man who was at the top of the tree, harnessed to the tree, fall.
Oh, God.
Stop. He was falling headfirst. Stop. 6 feet up. Stop as if he's levitating in midair. Flip over and land on his feet.
Oh my God.
And he claims that there are four or five, I just got goosebumps telling that story.
Yeah,
he claimed that there were four or five different people that witnessed this happen, and they all just kind of stopped and they couldn't even work anymore because no one could figure out how that had happened.
Of course.
The most profound story that he told to me was, I have a cousin who went to Dornbecker Children's Hospital.
I remember this story.
And he was in a coma for a very long time. And the doctors kept trying to prepare my family and letting them know, like, he's not going to come out of this coma. you know, we're going to have to pull the plug. You know, we're not, you know, just really trying to get them to make that decision because they really didn't think anything was going to happen. And my grandfather was at his bed one night and he just was devastated. And suddenly he said he felt the angel of death come into the room.
Mm-hmm.
And the room got cold. And he knew that they were about to take my cousin. And he just sobbed and he was praying. And he said, don't take him. If you have to take someone, take me. He's so young. Ah, getting emotional.
I know. I think this is...
Please don't take him. And my grandfather said that suddenly the room warmed.
Yeah.
And nothing changed as far as my cousin's status. And the next morning he woke up.
Wow.
Oh, I forgot about the story.
So the concept of spirits was very much ingrained in my mentality as something that is very much real. It exists. There's something outside of us. There's something that we can connect with. So I always kind of sought after that through the Christian faith. And I actually, when I was 14, was a part of a youth group because I had another friend who went to a church. And I was doing a youth group with her because, you know, I just thought it would be really fun. They decided, I have no idea why, to do an abortion debate.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, I remember this.
It was only
so mad the phone melted in my hand.
It was only me and one other girl who were willing to do the pro-choice side of the debate. Literally 60 other people were on the other side. They essentially attacked us for 2 hours and just tried to convince us why we were wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And it was our peers that were attacking us. But what made me more angry was it was grown-ass women attacking two 14-year-old girls. And one woman even came and gave her story of how it traumatized her and it ruined her life. And my response to that was, we could bring out women who say it didn't ruin my life.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And so I was so burned by that experience that I literally wrote off Christianity at that point, because I was just so angry and I was just like, how could you do that? Why would you do that? And so at that point, I just kind of went on my own spiritual way. And then as I got older and Courtney kind of started getting into things and the things that she would say we would talk about, and a lot of it was very spirit oriented, which resonated with me completely. Mm-hmm. So we could talk about things. And then when I was 20, I purchased a house that was a...
You were a child bride. You got married barely 20 years old. Barely 20 years old.
And I was barely 22. And
oh, you bought the house before. Okay, sorry. I know it's tangent, listeners, but this is welcome to us.
Yes, exactly. but I was about 20 years old. We bought a house, and the reason the people were selling the house was because they were an older couple. The woman was a paranoid schizophrenic, and the husband could no longer afford her medications and the mortgage, and they needed to live closer to their daughter so she could help take care of the mother. But the mother, being a paranoid schizophrenic, refused to sell the house because, in her mind, how will the kids come home and move back home if they don't know where we live? So he had to use legal power of attorney, to prove that she was not of sane mind to be able to sell the house out, essentially with her unwilling. So we lived in the house for about 4 or 5 months, and a few months into living at the house, I stopped being able to sleep at night. And I just started having problems. And we had become friends with a realtor who sold us the house. And she came over one night and was like, oh, you know, how are you liking it? And I was trying to find a way to say something to her without putting her off and making her feel totally creeped out. And I had told her, oh, yeah, it's, you know, great. We really love it here. You know, the last couple months have just been, you know, a little weird. And she goes, oh, so how did you find out?
Oh,
I said, what do you mean? And she goes, oh, how did you find out that she died? And I just, my head hung down and I just kind of laughed. And I said, let me guess, was it approximately 3 months ago? And she was like, yeah, how did you get notified about it?
You're a witch!
And I said, no, I didn't get notified about it. I said, that's when I started feeling like someone was watching me sleep at night. And she just totally got creeped out. And that's when I pointed, there were two bedrooms on the main floor, and we had chosen one room because I liked it more than the other. But the problem was I had intended at one point to turn the other into a nursery, but I hated that room. And it was always cold, and I didn't like being in it, and it made me feel icky.
You made me sleep in that room.
I did
Thank
make
you.
You sleep in that room.
Thank you.
Yeah. I was fine with that.
Yeah,
that
I know.
No,
that was a punishment for something. She's amazing, right?
I gave you an extra blanket. You're fine. And so I asked her, I pointed to the room, and I said, let me guess, that was their room. And she goes, yeah, that's the master. And I laughed, and I said, well, that's not the room you sleep in, but I don't feel welcome in that room. And so that's when I started kind of realizing why certain things were happening, and I started trying to talk to her and explain to her she had passed. We had done some significant remodeling to the house, and I noticed that the rooms that looked different that we had sheetrocked, she didn't go into. And so she really only hung out in her bedroom and then would stand in the hallway in between my room and her room and just stare at me at night. And that's when I would try and talk to her and try and explain to her she needs to pass. And the more that happened, the more frustrated she got, and she started turning the stove on. The worst was when she would open the front door.
I remember
my ex-husband, I had woken up because the house was cold, and I woke up and I look out the bedroom door and I see that the front door is wide open. And I called him at work and chewed him out. How could you leave your wife sleeping alone in the house and not close the door? And he swore up and down, you know, of course I closed the door, you know, that's insane. And so I went to work, made sure I shut the door when I left, came home from work. And as soon as I pulled into the driveway, the neighbor came running out and said, can I walk you into the house? Because when I got home, your door
was
wide
right
open.
Yeah.
And so he
walked
into the house.
County wins for scary day. Thanks, everyone.
I know. Well, and so I always, that's why I always kind of talk about how it's not really the path I chose.
It chose me.
Yeah. It showed itself to me. And there were so many things I experienced in that house alone that no one could ever convince me that this is not what exists and what's out there. There were too many things. And, I also, as a child, used to have really bad nightmares.
Mm-hmm.
So I learned at a very young age to control my dreams, and I can wake myself up out of dreams. I can change my dreams. I can literally stop in the middle of a dream and switch it to something completely different or jump into something entirely new. And so I feel like that also had a part of my understanding of different realms and worlds and things like that. But I really do. I feel like it was something that chose me and just made it undeniable. And from that point on, that was it.
Yeah. I think that's how so many people get started in this. I think that I don't know anyone who is into witchcraft that feels that they just up one day decided to do it. I think it's something that really does choose us. That's what's so interesting.
It's something that, to me, for the people who've embraced it and it becomes a part of their life, it's something that once they're exposed to it, it feels like home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It just,
agreed.
All of a sudden, things make sense.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe dots that you couldn't connect before, suddenly those dots are connecting. And so there's just a very aha moment involved. And so I do think that that's true, that for a lot of people, it just kind of, it comes upon them. And once it has, if it's true for them, then it's just like, there it is.
Yeah.
That's what I was looking for.
Yeah. No, I totally hear that. Yeah, I thought this is so funny because I remember these stories. And when I remember one time you and I tried to get her out of the house and I did
a botched exorcism.
And a crappy exorcism.
And I went to the woo store to talk to the lady to explain to her what we had tried to do. And she looked at me and she goes, you did an exorcism? And I said, well, yeah, I'm trying to get her out of my house. And she goes, but it's her house. She's like, she's not a demonic force. Like, it's a spirit. Yeah. And that's her house. Exorcism is going to have absolutely no effect on her.
No effect, yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, learned that. Thanks.
Yeah, you're like, figure that out.
Because it didn't work at all.
But I'm saying, and I remember what, and then she kind of looks at us and she went, yeah, she's still there. But, and she made a really good point that, you know, something we can venture into another time is that a lot of times when a person passes away, the illness goes away, but the spirit is still there. So she's like no longer dealing with the mental illness, but she still may not understand what has happened, especially if it, I think that's one of the reasons people do these different kinds of last rites is not just, and who knows what her family did. Maybe they right. didn't have,
maybe they didn't do anything.
They didn't do anything. Yeah. And so that's that. But, let's hear from Hillary now, you know, it's interesting. I want to say something first is that it's only been recently that I realized you were really embracing yourself as a witch. I mean, yeah, I remember we messed around, scared the crap out of ourselves with a Ouija board back in high school. And
more than
past,
once.
More than once, yeah. And
one really scary time in particular.
Oh, God. Oh, man. We'll save that for our Samhain episode later in the year. But it's like, to scare all of our listeners on our first time out, score. Maybe this is exactly what they want. But, I remember you like to find yourself as an atheist for so long, especially when we were, you know, we didn't see each other for a number of years because you were living overseas and I was in New York. And so it wasn't until just this past year, we went to the big pagan conference, Pantheacon in California. And I was like, oh, I'm just going to some weird pagan conference. You're like, sweet, I'm in. And you showed up and I was like, okay, good for you, adventurous. And then, but then she just knew all the lingo. She knew what was going on. She's like, yeah, I got a thing happening. So here we roll. And so it was just really interesting hearing about your journey into witchcraft. So spill it, Hillary.
Well, so I started around the same time as both Kanani and Courtney did. I was like in my teens and learning about tarot and experimenting with the Ouija board. And, you know, I mean, my whole, when I look back on my life, I mean, ever since I was young, I was able to see, hear, and communicate with spirits. But I just didn't, I don't think I ever, like, I think I just went, oh, that's just, I'm just feeling things, or I'm just sensing things, you know? And both my mother and my grandmother were intuitives, but they also would just be like, oh, I just got a little feeling, right? They just described it away. My parents weren't really religious. We did go to Presbyterian church for a while, but we didn't go super regularly. And I joined a youth group also at one point because I was like, I also had this sense of like, I feel like there's something that I'm not connecting to, or I don't know how to connect to, but I didn't really know what pathway to go. And I was kind of put off by that. And then I was in Catholic school. And I think, you know, being in Catholic school as someone that had no background in Catholicism, it was a real culture shock for me because I was like, wait, what? What do you mean I can't have my own opinions? Like, what do you mean I can't, you know, what do you
assemblies that would tell the 18-year-olds how to vote?
How to vote,
without
yeah.
showing the opposing
which actually,
side.
Walking out of that assembly almost got me suspended.
That's right. We walked out together. Yeah. I forgot about that. People were so mad.
People
at
were
us.
Really mad. And, you know, so I had this experience where, well, some of my high school experience was really powerful. It's what got me into music. It's what got me into theater. That part of it shaped my whole life. I think it really made me feel like an organized belief structure was bullshit. I was like, no, I don't want this. Like, this is just judgy and shitty, and it's telling me what to believe in. I don't agree with all of this. I agree with some of it. I agree with the, you know, treat people as you want to be treated and don't lie, steal, cheat, all that stuff. Like, the moral values were, you know, but we don't necessarily need that structure to get those values. And so I kind of went on my way and was like, yeah, no, I'm an atheist. But I still did all these little, like, people would ask me if I was religious and I'd say, oh, I'm kind of spiritual, but I'm not religious, because I didn't really know how to describe A, what I felt, and B, what I did in my daily life.
Classic story of the witch.
Yeah. I mean, it's like,
classic
it's really
story.
True. It's like, I would sit there and I mean, I would do, I got involved in doing a lot of ritual based performance art. I did ritual in my home. I like cleared energy in my home. I did all these things, but I still was like, No. I mean, that's just me. I just believe in my own stuff, right? I don't really like, I don't believe in anything. It's just me and energy, right? And as my mom got older and kind of found her own spirituality, she really got involved in energy and working with different energies and spirits and communicating. And so I kind of, at first was like, oh God, one more thing where someone's telling me how I should do something, but really started to see that she created a spiritual path for herself. that was different than what anyone else she knew was doing, or really only a few people she knew was doing. And I started to realize, like, huh, okay, I've been really stubborn about how I describe myself or how I describe my belief structure, because my perception of what being a witch was, or what witchcraft was, you know, finding high priestess, training, going this route, doing it this way. And because that was a structure, I was so anti any structure in a belief system, just personally. And I think it took years of me fighting to realize, like, huh, okay, yeah, actually I have been this all along, and I just was calling it something else because I didn't understand that being a witch wasn't this one pathway, that there were different ways, and all of them were valid and equal, and it really depended on each person, right? And so I kind of started to open up to that a little bit in London, and then moving back to the United States and living in the Bay Area, I met a number of witches, and I was like, shit, these people do what I do. Like, I just really was,
yeah,
like,
good old American witchcraft. Like, yeehaw, bitch.
I was like, huh. And, you know, and I,
for the record, they don't say yeehaw in the Bay Area.
I know that. Let's just talk about Hella,
you know.
Hello. Sorry, all right, baby. Right. Okay. You know what? Whatever.
I just got to a point where I thought, okay, maybe I need to think about this again and reassess what my path is. And I realized that by removing this idea of, like, this is the only way you do it, and this is the only way to be a witch, or the only way to practice witchcraft, I opened myself up to so many possibilities, and I learned from a number of people, and also took it a more structured practice, right? But again, kind of went about it my own way. So I think that, you know, it's one of those things that Cordy and I had this conversation the other night, where it was like, I think that many people have this perception that being a witch is this one way, or there's one pathway to go And I think there are many, and I think all of them are valid, you know?
Yeah. And I think that was one of the things that was really interesting about our talk. And, I know when I've taught witchcraft classes, I've had people come to me and they say, okay, I've read some books and I want to be a witch. I know the next thing I have to do is join a coven being a group of people that practice witchcraft in relatively the same way. They gather regularly. And covens are really great for magical support, so I'll make that very clear. But then sometimes there's a sense that joining a coven is the only way to work magic, and that if you join a coven that comes from a specific tradition of different covens that all practice in a specific way, and that within the coven there are initiations you can have to make yourself, quote unquote, a more powerful witch. And also to make it clear, I mean, that has been my path up until, you know, recently, and it's still, in many ways, I still train priests and priestesses. But to me, I remember having a conversation with someone a few years ago about what defines a witch, and, it was a reporter for some, I think it was Bust or something like that, was, talking, to a number of different witches. And there was a woman there who was like, I'm a witch. And I was like, yay, witches. And then she said, yeah, my group of witches, we all come together and we take off our shirts and we look at our breasts and we make art, and we make art about our vaginas, and we celebrate our womanly powers. And I was okay. And then the reporter was asking about, you know, her casting spells. And it was very quick learn that she doesn't work with spirits. Mm-hmm. She doesn't cast spells. She doesn't make, she called it magic. The kind of, you know, community that they had where they were, you know, hanging out topless and celebrating.
Which
the
made
powers,
it magical.
Which made it magic. Thank you. Thank you, Hillary. I knew I called that. I said, Hillary's going to say anything wise today. It's going to come from her.
It's not coming from over here.
I was
very modest.
So. No, she's not. She's not at all. It's true. No, but it was like, and I want to make this clear. I really had respect for what this woman was doing. I don't necessarily want to sit around and look at boobs. Well, sometimes, but you know, it depends on the circumstance. But I didn't feel that what she was doing was witchcraft. It was certainly some kind of feminism, feminine empowerment. Certainly had a place, make that very clear.
Probably certainly had a spiritual element.
Yeah, probably
well.
Spiritual. But to me, it doesn't matter to me how you become a witch, whether you have always had the ability and you've always just been working with your plants and your herbs and your garden and your cat, Or if you've gone through a series of initiations with a witchcraft tradition in a coven, to me, if you are not working with spirits and making magic, like casting spells, you're not a witch. That's just, you maybe a spiritual person, then
you could still be an intuitive. You could still be a number of things.
But if you're not creating magic, then I think that to me is the qualification for being a witch. You've got to be working with magic, because that's always been the role of the witch, is to make change for a community. And remember, like a lot of witches, never called themselves witches. Biddy Early, one of the most famous witches from Ireland, always associated as being Christian.
Yeah.
But people went to her when they needed a cursing or a blessing or a fertility spell or a money spell. And she cast some really serious magic to protect her community from cabin hunters who were evicting poor people into, homelessness, which basically in that, 1600s Ireland meant death. And she cast spells to chase the people out of town, but she was using Christian prayers, and who else knows? She said she got her magic from the fairies. To me, that's the old school kind of witch.
Yeah, for sure. I know there was.
She wasn't in a coven and going through initiations.
No.
But she was still a witch.
She was still doing it.
And
yeah.
I also make it very clear, some of the most, the witches that I know, great witches, been through a ton of initiations. I mean, I think that what I'm trying to get at is there's a lot of ways to go about it, but there's one basic qualification for being a witch.
I feel like I was very lucky in my early stages of coming into practicing magic and all of the things that I started getting into and learning, is that the woman that I was going to for help with all the activity that occurred in that house was much older. She was I think she was in her 60s. So she was far wiser than a stupid 21-year-old kid. And one of the classes that she taught, the first thing that she taught in the class, which just I completely absorbed, was she went through kind of initiations, and she would study this. And her name was, all these like spiritualist, magical, candle, whatever. It just got the name that she would, people would identify her as, just got longer and longer and longer and longer and longer until she was just over it. And she didn't care for any of the names or the definitions of what she was practicing or what she was doing. And she just didn't care. She didn't care about the titles. She didn't care if someone was initiated, not initiated. She wasn't impressed. It didn't matter to her. She was like, this is what I do. This is who I am. Take it or leave it. And if you need me to prove to you, my repertoire of how I've gained this knowledge, then you really don't need to talk to me anymore. Because she just was so over the egotisticalness of the titles and of that kind of stuff. And that helped me a lot because, especially in the beginning, with my background being mostly Christianity, I was very hesitant to adopt the title of a witch. Even though everything I did was witchcraft.
Absolutely, same.
Everything I did was witchcraft.
The dozens of brooms you had hung up in your house. And you named your cats Tarot and Runes.
Tarot and Runes. I still remember the day that Courtney came into my house, and I did. I used to decorate with brooms, and I had brooms on my wall. And she walked in, and she goes, that's totally normal, Because people who aren't witches, they totally decorate their house in brooms. And I was like, shut up. Just shut up. And she was totally right. And after that, every time I walked by it, I'm like, I'm not going to take it down because it's so pretty, but damn it.
Well, you gave me one of those brooms, and then my mom saw it because I was still living at home, and my mom goes, that looks like a witch's broom.
Like, and you're like, well, it used to be on Kanani's wall. So
like, it is a witch's broom.
Yeah. And her openness to not defining anything really allowed me to practice without being concerned with calling it anything. So for a long time, I would refer to myself as spiritual. I had everything in my house except for a pentacle, because I felt like that was kind of the tell, right?
Me also. That's so funny.
And so I had everything in my house that a witch would have except for a pentacle. Like somehow that lack of thing is going to make it any less apparent to anyone who walks in. And
runes, get out of the cauldron. I know. Yes. What are you talking about?
It's really funny because, it's the same. I feel exactly the same. It's like people would come into my home. They'd be like, oh, I'm having this problem. I'd be like, this stone is really good for this. Let me put together this herb mixture that's good for this. Blah, blah. And people would be like,
what?
oh, are you, you know, do you practice witchcraft? And I'm like, no, I'm spiritual.
Yeah.
I'm just very spiritual. Yeah. How do you know this? I mean, you know, I've learned it over the years. Like, and it was so funny because I was, same thing, doing all the steps, right? But was again, for me, just like, so I just was like, no, I just want to do my own thing because I was so put off by like, I was worried about like reactions to being called a witch, but on top of that, I just was like, I don't want to be anything. I don't want to be a Christian. I don't want to be a witch. I don't want to do any of it.
I just want to walk in the moonlight and talk to animals.
I know.
That's all I want.
Just continue like talking to spirits and like communicating with my dog. You know, it's like,
yeah, like the reason I liked what she said was because once you identify it, then suddenly people can hear it and think, oh, I know you. Like, you're Wiccan? Oh, I know what that means. Oh, you're a witch? Oh, I know what that means. Oh, you're a Christian? Like, it immediately puts you in a box.
Yeah.
Of this is what you believe, this is what you do. Even if maybe you do one or two of those things, but you don't do all of those things. And so I think for me that was one of the biggest reasons was I didn't want to be labeled as anything because I am me and I get to do what I want to do.
Same.
Yeah. But the other part also, like you said, was the societal...
stigma,
reaction and the stigma that comes with, what do you mean? You practice?
Yeah.
Well, especially I think having like been, if you've been around any sort of like pretty strict religious practice, especially around like Catholicism, even though, and it's funny because some of the Catholics I know work the most magic.
Exactly.
I've known.
The scariest witches are the Italian grandmas and praying that rosary in the second row of the church.
I mean, and it's
silently
like,
with those deadly eyes.
And it's funny because I'm like, because of this experience, I really was like, oh no, I can't be that because that means that I'm like evil or there's something wrong or people are going to think I'm weird.
I have to only wear black lipstick.
Right. I have to.
Which also black lipstick is great.
I love
to be honest.
Lipstick.
But you don't only, I like to wear red lipstick, you know, and that, or.
I like to wear some colors.
Or the other thing is you've got to wear,
you've got to wear
lavender, never wear makeup and run around barefoot all the time.
Right. And I was like, that's. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, today I look like someone hit me in the face with a fish, but usually I like to be dolled up. You know, it's like, it's...
Hit in the face with a fish is actually my look, so please don't steal that, because that's kind of, that's what I bring. That's what I bring.
Yeah, but you kind of own that in a way that I don't.
That's what I'm saying. That's mine. Don't take that.
But it is really interesting because you hear, I mean, I know many people that have had that same experience that you and I have. I know many people who have also gone a more structured route as well, but the people that haven't, that really were kind of more solitary practitioners that really found witchcraft and magic kind of on their own terms in their own way have almost identical stories, which is this, like, I was doing all these things, but I didn't know what to call it, or I was afraid to call it. Or I was afraid if I did call it that I was going to be judged by people that did it a different way.
Yes.
Because like, you don't want to walk in a room and be like, oh yeah, I'm a witch. And they're like, oh, well, what coven are you proud of? And you're like, well, I'm going to fall
What's your
shit.
Tradition?
Oh what's shit. Your, what's your tradition? Yeah. What's your, who trained you? Where did you learn?
And just to jump in for listeners who may not be familiar in that there's a lot of, you know, witchcraft traditions, but this idea of witchcraft tradition is relatively new. We're talking like the 40s and 50s.
Yeah.
You started getting people, that came together,
more formalized
groups, and started to develop a religion around this. And I feel like that's a way. Some people say that it was, you know, a lot of this came out of England and then spread to the United States. And a lot of people think that it might have been Europeans that were trying to reclaim an indigenous traditions.
I wonder though if that is just to make it more accessible to people.
Or make it more accessible, yeah. Or
because, you know, we like, again, it's like what people know or what people grow up with and are often introduced to is a more structured belief system.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think there is a craving for a kind of religion that doesn't have the kind of political restrictions that many of our mainstream faiths do. I mean, I know a lot of Christians that are constantly, they're very progressive and
that
very inclusive.
Pushing,
but there's so much energy that they put out there.
Oh, the amount of emotional labor and energetic labor that they do in order to, A, educate others and carve their own way within sometimes a very structured religion is pretty, I mean, it's really, I think the work they do is so powerful and so important, you know?
Yeah. And I find that most of them are witches too,
because
they end up like, oh, I'm coming to the Sabbath. Yeah. Let's celebrate the goddess. Woo-hoo!
One of the things that I thought was really interesting that I've seen that's a term that is popping up more and more is people calling themselves Christian witches.
Yeah. That's not new. That's not new.
No, but it's becoming like definitely a thing now where it's becoming very common.
Yeah.
And I feel like those are people like Hillary and myself who found themselves into the craft, but just kind of aren't able to, they're not ready to cut that cord yet. So they just add Christian witches because they're just not quite ready to disassociate. Whereas on the flip side, I think there's some people who consider them Christian witches who maybe just for them, Jesus is a part of their pantheon.
Right.
Like they found, like they just don't want to let that go because that just, that was something that rang true to them in their faith. And so as they branch out into this other stuff, they just, they need to take that with them. But I think that that's something that, I think the because the stigma is changing, I think it's allowing people to accept the term witch a little bit more when really it was always there. And just like you said, there are people who practice Catholicism. There's people who practice Judaism who do all kinds of
I have a friend of mine who's a Muslim witch, and she's very powerful, but she practices her Islamic faith. And, and she's also, double toiling and troubling alongside, she's really badass.
Yeah, I think it's, I mean, it just proves to show that, there is not, like, there's no one, other than making it an actual practice in your life, there's no, like, one right or wrong way to do it. And I think, it's great for us to have the opportunity to be able to express that to people, because I wish, when I was like, I don't want to believe in anything, but I also believe in all these things, but I don't know what to call it. And so I'm just going to call myself an atheist. You know, it's like when I was there, I wish that I had listened to something like this and gone, okay, oh shit, it doesn't have to be like this. It doesn't have to be this really like structured thing. It doesn't, I don't have to be afraid to call myself a witch. You know, I just wish that that was more available.
I think what I would, I'm sitting here and I'm just imagining new witches listening. Hopefully they haven't been turned off now by our personalities or or anything like that. At least not mine. But
I'm fabulous. So,
you do all right.
I'm unapologetic.
So. That is true. That's true. So, but I feel like the gift of witchcraft is it is such a creative. Let's go ahead and call it a faith, because you've got to have a faith in spirits to do the witchcraft.
Sure, yeah.
So I'd say that even if you don't want to call it a religion, I would call it a faith. It's so creative and so individually expressive, and it should be. I mean, you learn so much about the colors and textures of a person's spirit based on how they approach witchcraft, how they approach the craft. And I know witches that are uber intellectual, and you just see that their love for spirit comes from pages of books. And then you get some witches that, it's all about color and music, and this that their spirit is really reflected in the arts. I feel like for me, my spirit and practice is really taking cues from my immediate environment and the spirits that are around me. I mean, as much as I've studied and as many initiations as I've had, it always comes back to being the little girl in the backyard and staring up at the moon and knowing that there was something there that I could embrace. And, and that's, I had really crappy insomnia the last few weeks. And last night I was up, around 12:30 to 2 in the morning and just pacing my house, but the full moonlight coming in the window of my office, to me was the sign of the spirit being there, while I was having this difficult night. And, I feel like that's where it, for me, is coming back and saying the spirits are going to keep showing me the way. I just need to follow them. And sometimes I do. And a lot of times I'm dense as a brick and run into walls. And that's one of the things that you have to know with witchcraft, is that it's also can be a very confusing path, and a lot of wrong turns and false starts, and learning that the spirits don't know everything is actually a really horrifying discovery.
It's a really horrifying discovery.
One of the things too that I think for people, that one of the reasons that I really hope this helps people who maybe are new to the craft, and or maybe they've been practicing a really long time but they only do it by themselves and they don't join community, which is vast majority, I think, of practicing witches and pagans, is kind of a great analogy is, I go to festivals and things like that. My husband does not practice. And
you say festival, do you want to talk about what that means in case people might not be familiar?
Like a summer solstice camping festival.
So there, or witches, equinox people festival. That are witch right. associated will go to these things to meet other witches.
And most are would consider themselves witches, go and we have a ritual and we have events and we have workshops and it's a lot of fun. And now that I have children, I've told my husband, you know, I want you to go. And not that you need to participate in any of the pagan activities, meaning the ritual or the workshops or anything, but just come and hang out with us and be part of things for the kids and so that we can kind of all be one together. And at first he was very reluctant to that because he'd never experienced anything like it. He thought it was, you know, weird and what am I going to expect and all that kind of stuff. And he came and I remember his first day and he just kind of, he looked at me and he goes, it's just people camping. And yeah. I laughed and I'm like, what did you expect? You know, but then I realized he did. He somehow in his head, he had an expectation of what it was going to be like and that it was going to be weird. And so when he sees himself surrounded by doctors and teachers and policemen and artists and just normal
people
who work at Target, you know, just normal everyday people hanging out and spending time together, it shattered that fear. In that wonder of, you know, who are these weird people? And you just realize it's anyone.
Yeah.
It's everyone. And I feel like for people who are in the craft who also don't join community, I feel like they probably also have this fear. Like, well, I can't go to a festival. I don't have ritual attire.
Or
I can't go to a festival because I don't do my rituals right. You know, or they
100%.
They have this, like, expectation of, well, I'm not doing it the way that a quote unquote real witch.
The witches that I see on television.
Right.
The ones that whether not just the fictionalized ones, but the ones that interview the media.
Right. Yes.
There's
I don't
lot
have
of
the room. The room that is completely devoted to witchcraft where I have an altar and I have it's like a temple and I pray and I meditate. It's like so I feel like there's a certain roadblock that a lot of times people feel to join community. Like somehow they're not worthy
100%.
Or they're not at the level other people are. When the reality is when you get there, you realize these are your next door neighbors. These are everybody else. They have 9-to-5 jobs.
Exactly.
They work one or two jobs. They've got kids. They've got bills.
They usually have pets. They almost always
they
have pets.
They love animals.
Animals. Yeah. And that's one thing I think people are, and you know, my family really struggled with this with me, you know, me coming out as a witch and they, you know, heard I was hanging out with witches. They're like, who are these people? What are they doing? I said, well, one of them is a government employee, high up government employee, works in the, you know, office of a U.S. attorney. And another one is a teacher. Another one works in publishing. Another one's a stay-at-home mom. And, you know, these are people with, and, you know, even in my place of work, you've got, you know, executive vice presidents coming in, you know, in suits and ties and stuff like that, getting all witchy stuff and wanting to get tarot readings for me and stuff like that. And I think that there's, you know, pieces of that everywhere. But I think, you know, before we go to our last segment, I think it'd be great to talk a little bit about how we each practice. So I can go first. So for me, I try to get to, I have a little altar that I have set up in a corner of my office. And, you know, I haven't always had an office in the past. It's been in my bedroom or, you know, sometimes it's, but I go there and just light a candle and just tell the spirits that I'm listening. I don't always, and I have some readings that I do just from, you know, some daily devotionals, just for my own spirit stuff. But I often just go and just say, hey, I'm present. Because for me, the spirits talk to me a lot of my dreams. And I just have to remind them that I'm available. And if I'm having a really tough time, I'll be outside and, you know, talking to the moon and the stars and trees. And that's the thing is, I don't necessarily get an answer right away. But I do find the spirits ultimately will reveal for me what I need to know about the people in my life, how I can be a better person, and things I should avoid. And sometimes they'll actually come to me in a dream and say, you need to worry about this person. That person is going to screw you over. And every single time the spirits have told me something like that, it's come true. So I finally mostly learned to listen, even if it's not what I want to hear. So why don't you two talk about how well you practice, and we can move to our final segment for the day.
Sure. So for me, I have an altar in my room that I also go to. I have a candle that I light. I have a couple different candles that I light specifically for either different purposes or just a general purpose. And I also try to just leave myself open to whatever information I'm supposed to get. It took me years to actually stop myself when I feel like I'm getting information that I should be getting and not just like push it aside, because sometimes I'll be in the middle of something. I'm like, really, right now? Yeah. I'm like trying to get something done. And so I've really found over the years to be able to just be open and listen. And sometimes it comes in my dreams, although normally it comes in like my day-to-day life. Like I'll be wandering around and then I'll either hear something or feel something very specifically. And I'm like, oh, and it's usually pretty clear to me, what they're trying to tell me, what my spirit guides specifically are trying to tell me. Or sometimes it's a sense. I think that I try to really listen to that. I also work a lot with herbs, and have integrated that into my practice as well. And I'm learning more and more about that also. I try to just remain kind of as open as possible. I didn't do that for a long time, or I kind of felt like I would only be open sometimes or in a specific setting. And I found that for me, at least, you know, just being kind of being willing to hear and listen and pay attention to those little feelings you get, and the messages that come through, throughout day to day, has allowed me to have much more clear guidance in what I'm doing, but also, specifically in people around me, and how to put boundaries in place with those people has been like a big lesson that I think I've learned.
I think that's a big challenge for a lot of new witches is people want your energy and, you know, spirits start trying to pull you to different directions. I hear a lot about that from young witches.
Yeah.
Kanani, talk about yourself.
So I kind of describe people when it comes to kind of being involved energetically and with spirit, whether energy or spirit or both, is to me, it's like you have a light bulb on the top of your head, and some people walk around and the light bulb's on. And those are the people that, you know, spirit and energy and stuff are going to be most attracted to, because they're like, she can hear me. She's going to know when I talk to her, and they're going to, you know, mostly ignore the people that don't have the light bulb on. And so I feel like there are definitely times where I've just been really focused on other things or my family, and just the light bulb is not on. Mm-hmm. And I do my own kind of thing, but I don't get as much spiritual activity. I have an altar in my room. I do a lot of, my personal choice is a lot of candle magic. I do a lot of candle magic. I'm also very, I'm very big on like, fire scrying, and also, I'm huge into scents and smells.
Yes. You always have. Remember you bought a room of fairy books back in the day.
Always. Yeah. That can just transform my mood and put me in a different place. And so, I've taught my children is both my children know how to smudge. So they've helped smudge the house and things like that. So, I've always kind of practiced things like that, but ever since we started talking about doing the podcast, suddenly I've gotten emails from people in the community asking me, hey, do you run a coven by any chance?
Yeah.
Could you help me? Cause I'm really looking for someone who can teach. All I have to do is just turn the light bulb on
and it just comes.
Same.
And I'm starting to, you know, wake up in the middle of the night again, and I'll notice that, you know, there's spirits in the living room or something. So it's like, all I have to do is just flip the switch on and it just comes pouring in from all directions.
I'm just thankful that you know when you can turn it off, because I think that that's especially a new witch's struggle.
It's really important.
And you have to be able to do that. And I feel like the one thing, because for the longest time I was pushed into being a part of community and helping community and joining community. And in doing that, I feel like I've been really successful and I feel really good about everything I've done. However, when you're so focused on helping other people and helping community, you're not really working on your own stuff.
On your own stuff. Yeah. Yeah.
And so I feel being dishonest if I didn't say that I really haven't focused on my own practice and my own things, which is something that I'm kind of activating and wanting to work on. Mm-hmm. It's like I gave my energy out for so long that now I want to kind of use some of it for me. And I'm also noticing different things in my kids that I'm feeling like I need to pull back from some of the community stuff to focus on me and to help them.
Yeah.
Because clearly things are starting to happen for them that I need to be able to help them with.
Yeah, I think that's really true. I think it took me a really long time to figure out how to put up boundaries both in you know, when to turn things off, like when I am really not, when I don't have the energy to either talk to spirit or people in the community around me.
Yeah.
You know, I used to be really, really bad at boundaries with people and spirits, you know, where I just would be like, I'd be like, okay, can I just get through one effing thing? And I'm pretty open most of the time, but if it's something really serious, like, I mean, I tend to not get many spirits in my house unless I actively like open it to be, because I really hate it, because I get spooked really easily and I hate walking down the hallway and feeling like there's someone standing behind
me. Oh yeah.
Drives me fucking crazy. Right. So I've really worked hard to, you know, it took a lot of learning and a lot of mistakes, to figure out how to put those boundaries in place. But oddly enough, putting those boundaries in place with spirits also taught me how to put those boundaries in place with people.
Yeah.
You know,
I feel like it'd be a great topic perhaps for our next podcast. It's like, I'm a witch, now what?
Now,
and helping people figure out what do you do next? The books, some books that might
some
be
books,
helpful.
Yeah.
And, you know, Kanani's talked a lot about community, and, you know, Hillary's talked a lot about like the boundaries you put up. So I think maybe that will be our topic for next time.
Yeah.
So meanwhile, final segment, Kanani's got a little cauldron rituals, you call it. How does that work?
What did you want to call it? You wanted to call it
as below, so above. Oh yeah, that's
as above.
Yeah, as below,
as
so
below.
Below. Okay, so
above.
Listeners, if you're not familiar, there's a witchcraft saying that goes as above, so below, which basically means what's happening in the broader world is reflected in the smaller world. Loosely, that's what it means. I'm still a lot of like within witchcraft. There's a lot of ways you can take it. You know, or as what the gods are doing above or the spirits are doing above affects those of us that are below. Well, we're flipping that around and calling it as below, so above. So Kanani, tell them how it goes.
So what you do is you kind of think about, and you can use whatever time period you want, whether it be the last week, the last month, of what it is that was really great and what you want to focus on, or what goal you want to set for yourself, and also what do you want to let go of?
Yeah.
What is something negative or something that happened that you're like, this is inhibiting me from moving forward. I need to let this go so that I can move on. And then what you would do is you would write down what it is you're trying to get rid of and what you don't want anymore, what no longer serves you. And you can write it down and then you would put it in the cauldron.
Or any kind of pot,
or
bowls, anything. Anything can be a cauldron.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, Kanani has a gift of finding really beautiful cauldrons at flea markets, but
yes,
not everybody has that talent.
I don't have that talent.
But yeah, no, you can also use a pot or a bowl or something like that.
Yes.
So we've got pens and paper here, and we're going to write our stuff down and put it in this cauldron that Kanani picked up at the flea market. So, okay, so as below, so above. So for me, you know, the end of 2018 had a lot of loss in it for me, and I feel like looking back at the last few months of it, it was just me crying all the time. And so, you know, death is a part of life, but, you know, I lost some people that really were very close to me. And so while I'm never going to let them go, it's always part of my heart. I wouldn't say that, but you do have to let people go. But while I'm never going to forget about these people, I'm going to let the grief go. So that's what I'm writing down on my paper. And I'm saying, let the grief go. And what I'm looking forward to is I've got a new book coming out in 2019.
Yay!
On the goddess, the Morrigan, who a lot of witches revere and work with. And so really put my focus on giving that the biggest oomph that it can. And probably get a new tattoo. I'm going to say two things. So that's my as above. All right. So mote it be, which is another witchcraft saying, which means kind of like, may it be so. Let it happen. All right. Done. I'm out. Okay.
So for me, it has been a lot of loss as well, although I tend to be pretty good at letting go of grief, or just letting it come when it comes and letting go of it and not letting it linger. But for me, one of the things that I deal with frequently is imposter syndrome. And so I'm going through applying with a bunch of companies, and it's this idea that like, I go into every scenario going, oh, but what if I get there and they don't like me? Or like, I shouldn't apply for this because I don't know this one skill out of the 75 skills that they've asked for. I know all the other ones, but this one thing. And so one of the things that the intention that I'm really trying to set forth is to trust that I am a capable human, and that I have experienced all these experiences and have come with a lot of experience, and to not stand in my own way when trying to reach for success, both in work, but also in performance art and everything else, and to try not to be let the mean voices in my head tell me that, you know, I shouldn't do that because I'm not ready or not good enough, but to just help change those voices around into I am ready and I am good enough. And so that is what I'm writing down. And wait, what was the other thing?
So that's something good you're looking forward to.
Something good I'm looking forward to. I'm really looking forward to this podcast.
Yes.
But I'm also working on a ritual event that's happening in February. The dates aren't quite solidified yet, but I'm going to be doing some ritual performance art there. And so I'm really excited to get back into the practice of making art specifically with ritual involved. So I'm very excited to kind of hone that back in.
Yeah. All right. Kanani?
So what I would be letting go of is I have a horrible habit of doing 8 million things.
No!
Are you sure?
That's amazing!
And Courtney has tried to have an intervention for years.
I stopped trying. And I'm not going to waste my time on futile.
It was futile. And I finally have reached a point where I realized it was too much. And I realized that in the process, I really wasn't doing anything for me and for the betterment of me. And while I was very happy to be doing things that helped with community and all my volunteerism and all this kind of stuff, it was very fulfilling. At the same time, I felt like in some ways I was doing myself a large disservice by not also giving myself the same amount of care and thought for what I should be doing and what I cared about. And so that's kind of what I'm doing, is just the overdoing it is getting tapered down and getting better about not accepting so many responsibilities, not allowing people to depend on me 100 times.
This is Courtney, and I'm seriously codependent. So the fact that one of my very best friends is a serious workaholic has made my life really difficult. So I'm really thankful that this is happening.
So I'll have more time to hang out with Courtney. Absolutely.
Oh, crap. That was a good thing.
And so that's kind of what I'm letting go of. I'm letting go of my just constant overdoing of helping other people and putting other people's needs above my own, and starting to focus more on what I need and ways that I can grow and things like that. Because I also feel like being a mother, you know, if I'm not taking care of myself, then I'm not properly taking care of my kids and I'm not taking care of my family. And so I need to come back inside a little bit and reevaluate and refocus. So that's kind of what I'm letting go for 2018. And I'm really looking forward to the podcast, but I'm also looking forward to really starting to dig into things that I am passionate about and things that I haven't done that I've always wanted to do or that I've always liked or that have always seemed fun. So I'm very much looking forward to that and really starting to find myself in new ways.
Yeah. Well, so mote that shit, witches.
So mote
that bee. By the way, for you newbie witches, it's a great way to end your spells. So mote it bee. Okay, great. Well, this has been That Witch Life Podcast with Courtney, Kanani, and Hillary. Join us back in 2 weeks. We will be talking about I'm a witch. What now? So you figured out that you're a witch. Now what do you do? And we will tell you about all the mistakes we made along the way, and hopefully,
so many mistakes.
So many mistakes. So even if we don't have
all the mistakes.
Think we should all talk about all of Hillary's mistakes.
Hey,
I think those.
Listen,
most of those involve me, so it's okay.
I'm going to be implicated in every single one of them.
So all right.
I go down, you go down.
I know. It's going to happen. All right. So anyway, till then, witches, keep your chins up. We love you. So mote it be.
So mote it be.
So mote it be.
Join us on the first and third Mondays of the month for magical tools, tips, and stories about living as a witch in today's world.
Find us at thatwitchlife.com for archived episodes, or to ask your burning questions for us to answer in a future podcast.